Today on the AV Podcast, first of all, Happy New Year. Happy New Year. We made it to another decade. I'm grateful for the fact that we have an opportunity to set up your life the way you want it for the next 10 years. And personally, I can't wait for it. 2020 for me started months ago. So cheers to you. I wish you the very best and hope you achieve all the goals that you want to accomplish. No resolutions. Those things disappear too fast. So write down your goals and go ahead and achieve them. Damn, I sound like a motivational speaker right now. But it's all good. It's all good. I want everybody listening to win. All right, now that we got that out of the way, while we move forward, I want to take a look back at the last decade. So we changed up our annual MVPs of the Year podcast to discuss our MVPs of the last 10 years in sports, entertainment, the culture, and everything else in between. We had to split it up into two parts, so, you know, I hope you sit back and enjoy this one, or these two. Now, South Sharav is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows from South Sharav Radio. Start my year off right by giving me that five-star love that you know I appreciate. And to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. 2020, the vision's never been clearer.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
Welcome to the season and wrap-up of the AV Podcast. An annual tradition like no other. This is a little different from how we normally do it because usually every year we do it with the MVPs of the year. But as I've mentioned in the last few podcasts anyway, we're doing it a little bit differently. We're doing it on the MVPs of the decade, the most impactful people in sports, entertainment, pop culture, socio-political, anything that's regarding the anything that had an impact in the last 10 years. Whether it's people, things, movements, we're going to be covering all of it here, and we're going to be listing our MVP list for those categories. So without further ado, I got my partner riding shotgun with me as we do these annual episodes. Please welcome Sean Adonis to the show.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today, sir?
I'm good, brother. 2020 about to be up on us, man. I never thought I'd be seeing 2020 and wrapping up the decade with you again. I figured, okay, yeah, that was fun, that year wrap up, and now I'm like, wow, we're wrapping up the decade.
We're turning into skills. We're turning into the podcast version of the skills wrap up, man.
Seriously, exactly, man.
I like it. It's good. We just got no bars. That's the only thing. I don't got bars.
I got some crown here, so maybe by, you know, midway through, I might have some bars. They might not be good bars, but
you might have about 8. I'll do the beatbox. You got a crown with you today?
Yeah, man. I'm going to give you the freestyle version of beer goggles in about 20 minutes. And then be like, man, I killed that freestyle. And listen back like, oh my gosh, that was trash.
Well, I'm holding in my hands an elegant bottle of Heineken. I haven't had a Heineken in a long time, actually. We're written back a little bit to what I used to drink this more often, I should say.
Oh, I'm disappointed, man. That's lightweight.
I'm sorry.
That's lightweight, Calvin.
Mind you, Sean, I got like a 2-4 case beside me, so.
Oh, okay. So you got like the hat. Yeah. You got the Heineken, two Heinekens on each with the straw, essentially.
Exactly. While I'm talking to you, the beer is spilling through my beard and on my shirt right now.
Okay, that's cool.
As we're speaking right now.
All right. The quantity over quality, that's cool. You got enough beer, and then I co-sign that.
Yeah, you got enough. Got enough to knock you down. I'm not driving, so I should be
all right. Sounds good.
I should be all right. let's get to the list right now. All right, so first up, we got Beyonce. So she's essentially become the hit maker of the decade. She's won too many awards to mention. She became, I think, more than anyone, the one artist that moved culture. She stopped everything in its tracks. Every time she puts an album or any type of content out, she stops everything in its tracks. If she dropped an album in the middle of this podcast, we're losing everybody for at least 48 hours. She's dropped the 4 album and the self-entitled Beyonce album in 2014. That was an unauthorized album drop, I like to call it. But the album that completely impacted the culture was Lemonade, which was the Empowering Woman's album, the one that was spilling the tea about her reaction to her marital issues with Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. That came complete with videos from every song. Once again, dropping unexpectedly for the fans to devour. She topped the decade off with her Coachella performance and then released the subsequent content from that performance, which ended up being the Homecoming live album and the Netflix film. What are your thoughts, Sean?
My thoughts, Calvin, as usual, is you have all of those facts are baseless. Beyonce was like a blip in the... No, I'm kidding. Realistically speaking, man, like, I agree with everything you said. It can't be argued. I think that within our culture these days, you know, this decade has been a lot of microwavable moments, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like moments that feel great today, and then tomorrow you're like, yeah, but what did you do today, type of thing, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I think that when it's all said and done, like you said, Beyonce, her impact in this decade, it cannot be argued. It's so substantial. And she's one of the few artists that people will look back at and be like, she's going to take place, or she's going to be mentioned in the same breath as the Michael Jacksons and, you know, the Luther Vandross and artists that are looked upon in history as, you know, really being a staple in music history. Think about it. Like, think of what we're seeing. Like, you saw her developed from Destiny's Child to being a solidified icon. You know, people use that word loosely, including myself, referring to myself. But, like, she's an icon, man. Like, she is larger than life when you think about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You see everything she's done, you know, and accomplished and continues to accomplish, while all of her contemporaries do not even come close.
And you know what's scary? Not only do the contemporaries not come close, the contemporaries are throwing her roses. Like, if, I don't know if you remember the... Yeah. I don't know which award show it was, but I remember when Adele won, like, Album of the Year, and one of the first things she said was, like, basically, like, I don't know why I won this award. This award needs to go to you, Beyonce.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
And she was like, yo, you motivated me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
She's like, yo, that. Like, that was... But that's not the first time you heard that from people this decade in terms of, like, other, like, female artists or other artists in general. Like,
it's true.
You know, like, she... Love her or hate her, you know? Like, I was never the biggest Beyonce fan. Watch out, Beehive. Watch out. Don't sting me. But, like, you know, in terms of, like, the impact she's had, I mean, listen, I think even the concept of having the unexpected album drop, I think it's one of the most underrated things that she's done this decade, and the impact that it can have. Because, like, you remember back in the days when we used to buy like records, we're in that space where we're always, you know, counting our pennies to go buy an album or what have you. And the buzz that came from, like, a major artist would be so huge, like, you couldn't... the anticipation was so crazy. But I think in this day and age, in terms of, like, you know, all the streaming services and file sharing that's been happening the last, like, two decades, really and truly, you don't feel that same impact when there's, like, an album coming. You know, you hear it, so, depending on who the artist is, sometimes, like, whether the Drakes, and we'll get to him, but, like, whether the Drakes or different people like that will come out, and, you know, they have an album coming, you're like, okay, like, they're gonna be coming soon. But really and truly, that doesn't work anymore, right?
That's true.
But to create that buzz, to just drop an album at midnight, boom, wait a minute, there's a new Beyonce album? That shit shuts everything down.
That's
true. You know what I mean? That shit, by the time you... A lot of times, how many times have you woke up in the morning and you're like, oh, you see Twitter and Instagram going insane, and you're like, oh, like, damn, I guess I got to go on Spotify, download a new album.
And, yeah, you know, no, you're right.
And then by the end of the night, it's like... That whole, you know, there's hashtags, there's, you know, people are already quoting their favorite lyrics from the album and their favorite songs, and, you know, then it's like it leads into the weekend, and, you know, like, there's that whole thing is huge. That builds such a hysteria for the content that you create.
No, you're right.
You know, I think that's probably one of the most underrated things she's done, like, honestly, this decade. On top of everything else that she's done, I think that's one of the biggest things that she hit the industry with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, like, again, you're going to look back, and society and pop culture are going to look back and be like, you can put her in any, you know, and any other what's what I'm looking for, generation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, can you say that she can't hang with the Aretha Franklins and she can't hang with whoever you want to say, you know, the Temptations or whomever else, as far as just quality of music and everything, the whole package.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's just such a legitimate artist and has such a significant impact, you know, on culture, on pop culture and music, yeah, and everything. It's just like, it's crazy that, you know, you're here to witness this. You know, you witnessed the Michael Jordans, and you say, I was there for that. I was there for Michael Jordan. I was there for Beyonce. This is a major thing that we're witnessing here, man. Something that's not easy to repeat in the next generation. I'd be surprised if in the next generation you say there's somebody like Beyonce in the next the next decade, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely, like, you know, you could throw like Janet Jackson and Madonna on there.
Exactly, like exactly. Yeah,
impact
exactly.
For this generation, she's definitely represented like that way for sure.
Right.
And I mean, I'm looking at some of the songs like this decade that really hit hard. Like, you got 7-Eleven, you got Blow, you got Drunk in Love, the party song, Love on Top, Run the World, Freedom, Formation, Sorry, like... Yo, the list goes on and on. Like, it's too much to mention, but...
Yo, and sorry to cut you off. I'll just, like, when you mention all those songs, I don't know if you saw that documentary that she did.
You know what? They're talking about the Coachella, the Netflix. I still haven't watched it.
Oh, bro.
I hear it's crazy. I know. I hear it's crazy.
You have to watch that.
I'm really late on it. I know.
I'll tell you what. I'm not a Beyonce fan. I watched that. I was like, man, this lady's work ethic. She strives for perfection. The kind of performer she is and her catalog, the songs you just named, I'm not even a Beyonce fan, but I watched that, I watched her performance, and I'm like, this is amazing, man. The documentary was amazing, her performance is amazing. You could sit me at a Beyonce concert right now. Would I be excited to go? No. I'd be like, why am I at a Beyonce concert, man? You know, but as soon as she would hit the stage and she would watch that, I'd be like, man, this is magic. It's like, I sound like a cornball for saying it, but it's magic. You watch it, you're like, man, it's so polished. Like, if you watch that documentary and see the show she put on, and even when you think back to it, and again, we shrug our shoulders at it, she's performing at whatever, the Grammys, da-da. Well, who cares, it's just Beyonce. When you see the level, like the show she puts on, and the amount of work it must have went into putting on a show like that with so many moving parts and make it so flawless, and how she has she strives for perfection. Man, it's amazing. She is an amazing performer. I've heard arguments between who's a better performer, her or Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson's a way better dancer, obviously, but performer putting on a show, all moving parts, I can't say that's a dumb argument. Like, we're seeing greatness here in this decade, man. This is greatness right here, man.
And before we move on, the one thing I gotta add, I can't lie, I think my favorite joint that she made this decade was 7-Eleven. That song to me was, I can't remember who produced it. That song to me was fire. Like,
I can't even remember what song that is. Can you sing it for me?
Shona Sideways, slap it in the air.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, that song was
that
fire.
Video was dope too.
Yeah, that song was
fire. Is that my yeah, that was dope.
Yeah,
man.
That song was fire. And it knocks.
Beyonce's a beast, man. Beyonce, she's a beast. Honestly speaking, even now, we're singing her praises. I don't think this generation, even though they give her flowers, I don't know. They just need to remind us. We need to remind her we know how great she is every once in a while. Like a Beyonce day here and there, just randomly thrown out there. Like, Jesus. She's amazing, man.
All right, so next up, and sorry, before I move on, so just want to let everybody know, this is a random, like, we're going to list the MVPs in random order. There's no order of how we're ranking this. This is just our nominees for MVPs of this decade. There's no ranking to them. It's just kind of kamikaze right now, so let's just go with it. So next up, we got Drake. He's essentially become the most popular rapper in this decade.
Yeah.
He's arguably the most popular musician. He's the most streamed artist this decade. He's also won countless awards. His sound shifted the way music sounded for these last 10 years. which to me is always indicative of how powerful you are as an entity. Whether when the genre is basically putting out work to sound like you, you know, that's when you know you've become a powerhouse. He's definitely shined light towards the city of Toronto on a worldwide scale. He's been involved in a few beefs. None of them took him down. The power of his brand just would not allow it to happen. He's hosted multiple award shows, Saturday Night Live a couple of times. And he seems, though, even though he's starting to enter a new age and a new phase of his career, he's not the young buck anymore. He's leaving the decade as star-worthy as he entered, if not more powerful. Why is he the MVP to you?
Oh, man, I got to say, Drake, I think we've talked about this to a certain degree, but there's a million reasons as to why Drake shouldn't be right now. He had every strike against him coming into the decade, right? He was Canadian, first and foremost. He was a television, I won't say star, but he was a Degrassi. He was Wheelchair Jimmy. So on top of that, he was a character that wasn't the most his character. Him in and of itself is a joke, right? Wheelchair Jimmy. I'm sure you've seen the clip of him getting shot and he's in a wheelchair.
Right.
So, there were so many reasons as to why Drake should not have worked, right? But, I mean, listen, whatever. I know we have friends of ours that call me the Drake, stan and all this stuff. I'm not even really a Drake stan. I was early on the bandwagon when I first heard him. I'm like, wow, this guy's really great. And, of course, the Lil Wayne cosign legitimized that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But this is where the pupil overtook the teacher, right?
Yeah.
People looked at him as Lil Wayne's protege. He was taken really seriously to where he was then seen as, I'm sure a colleague. And now, if you look at it, he's overpassed. Lil Wayne, overpassed anything Lil Wayne has, of course Lil Wayne is a legend, but he's surpassed what Lil Wayne was as far as impact to music, impact to culture, impact to, I would say culture, because not only just music, like you said, Saturday Night Live, I'm sure he's going to be in films and stuff going forward, but I mean, he's been, I think I heard a stat the other day, I watched some of the interview he did with, them dudes, I don't remember what they're called.
Oh, Elliot Wilson and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and he's been at the top of the charts consistently. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't fell off. Just when you thought he was, he was good. Like, I figured, okay, his 50 minutes are over. Back when he did that song with Eminem, when he had that remix with Eminem and can't remember who else. I'm like, man, okay, whew, man, Drake has really seen the best he's going to get. He actually got M on a song, and okay, now he's put out this album, and he's doing this, and I thought, okay, his 15 minutes are about to be up, but he's just continued on an upward trend and continued to dominate music to the point where now he's cemented himself as the top hip-hop artist, and like you said, one of the top artists in music, period. And when you say his name now, there's a certain amount of respect that is given throughout. If you're a hip-hop fan, if you're a middle-aged white lady in Iowa, you just know, okay, Drake, he is one of the top artists of this decade. So this night, you laid it out, but it's not even really debatable. Love him or hate him, he's really been one of or the top artists of the decade. And it's nothing to really argue, to be honest.
So, a couple of things. So, first off, and I've always told you this, I've always felt like you missed your calling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and, I've always told you that you should have been an A&R in a past life.
I should have.
You really should have. Because you called out some people before they blew up. And I remember 50 Cent was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Fabulous, when Fabulous, he didn't fall off, but, when Fabulous kind of had that resurgence a few years ago, you were the first to call it. I remember you were like, yo, Fabulous, yo, this guy is fire right now. Calvin, you need to listen to every one of his mixtapes.
And you ain't lying.
And I was like, you know what? I didn't even question you at that point. I'm just like, all right. I just went and started downloading all the mixtapes, and I'm like, yep. Anytime Fabulous has a mixtape coming out, to this day, I don't even ask questions. I download and I listen to it, and I'll critique it later.
But Meek Mill.
Meek Mill was another one.
You, when he had his, he had his mixtapes and his Flamers, mm-hmm. three, I think, and Flamers.
You're like, he's going to be a star. I'm like, all right.
Lil Wayne
was the next one. But Drake
Nicki
was...
Nicki Minaj.
And Drake. But Drake was the one where I was like, when you explained it, I was like, the guy from Degrassi? The light skin guy? I'm like, Sean, what are you talking about? I'm like, I think that was one of the few... where I was like, or that might have been the one where I was like, nah, I don't know about that one, Sean. But mind you, I didn't hear any of his stuff. And you're like, Calvin, you're like, he sings and he raps. He actually raps pretty well. The production is really well done. And he's safe. He's polished, you know, half black, half white guy. Listen, man, he's basically ready to go. Like, he's basically like a ready-made machine, ready to go.
Man, Kevin, the more you talk, why am I not on this list of MVPs for the decade? Because honestly speaking, I've been calling this out. Because this is before So Far Gone, let's not forget.
Yeah, that's what
he
I mean.
He ain't even dropped So Far Gone. I just heard some mixtape tracks. I'm like, holy shit, this guy's dope, man.
I'm telling you. I'm giving you your roses right now.
Yeah, I'll take them all.
You want the yellow petals? Which one do you want? You want the white ones?
I want a whole bouquet, and I want one to put behind my ear, maybe in my hair or some shit like that. Listen, I'm here for the roses. Keep on praising me, Calvin. I'm sorry I cut you off. Keep on telling people how great I was.
All right, I'm going to stop now. but I mean, like, with him, it's you know, like, to see the run that he's been on, it's kind of surreal. Especially seeing where Canadian rappers have peaked out, you know, in the past and stuff. I sounded to some of them are. Like, to see it get to this degree where it's like he's basically the biggest, you know, you're seeing now he's at the point that he has his own jet, he has his own plane, not a private jet, like his own plane. And like, you know, you're seeing it to this degree, like he's...
Yeah, that was crazy.
Sean, like he's affected culture to the degree that across the border, you got people trying to do their version of Toronto slang, which makes me seem like I'm living in some sort of a bizarre world.
Seriously.
Especially when you look to see like how that would have been received like 15, 20 years ago. Like they rocked with us, but nobody was trying to steal the slang. Now you're hearing rappers saying like, yo, I need a ting and all this stuff. And I'm like, what is happening here?
Funny, me and Asani were having the same conversation with Karen the other day. And she's like, I don't believe that people really are legitimately trying to jock Toronto slang. I'm telling you, Drake has put it out there. He's legitimized Toronto dialect as a respectable slang out there, a respectable way of speaking. People respect it out there. That's like, I can't believe it. I'm telling you, man. Me and Asani were telling them, listen, like you said, a ting and this and that, and they know. They know the slang and the slang buzzwords from Toronto. It's known out there now. Who would have thought that would have ever happened, man?
Now let's take a look at some of the stuff that's gone on this decade. He launched a huge album, essentially a double album, during the middle of a beef that he lost to with Pusha T. And overall, the Drake machine was so powerful, it didn't even matter.
That's true.
He also dropped an unexpected mixtape in the middle of Puffy's concert during All-Star Weekend in 2015 that basically shut the concert down. Apparently, from what I was told, it even had people checking their phones during his concert. I don't know if you remember this, but that was right after Puffy and him had that beef.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
And All-Star Weekend, it was in New York City. Puffy had his major Bad Boy reunion concert and was bringing out like every single star you can imagine. And they said there was a point where maybe like just after midnight, everybody was like looking at their phones like, oh shit, Drake dropped an album. So it was like it was that big. It actually took attention away from some, you know, from eyes at a concert.
Hold on. Where was I in 2015? What mixtape was that? I don't remember that.
If you're reading this, it's too late.
Oh, yes. That was a big mixtape.
You know, sure. and that was a big mixtape. You know, he put out a joint LP with Future. He had some of the best albums of this decade in terms of Take Care, Nothing Was the Same. And one of the underrated things that I give him respect for, too, is he brought his team with him and he made them stars. Like the Boy Wonders, the 40s, the Nikos. Like, he turned OVO into a brand. Like, that's the thing that I give props for, because he could have, especially in the position he started going, he could have been like, all right, guys, well, look, man, it's been fun. And so long, good luck. Actually, you know what? Not even good luck. And just walk off into the sunset and Go be produced by Pharrell and everybody else for the rest of his life.
It's true.
But he took those guys with him, and now, like, a guy like Nico who doesn't produce or anything like that, I mean, like, OVO Nico's a star. Yeah. Like, people know who OVO Nico is. People know who OVO Chubb is. You know what I mean? Like,
it's true.
Like, the clothing, the radio station, Apple Music, the record label. Like, the guy had the Midas touch from shoe resales. He squashed beef with most of his rivals and is now making content with them, like the Meek Mills and the Chris Browns and
Tory Lanez.
Yep, yep. Yeah. And then in the Weekend. Right. And, you know, he also had a habit in turning diss tracks into club bangers, like Stay Scheming and the back-to-backs. And listen, man, I don't know what else to really say to really put into emphasis of the impact that he's had this decade. But, I mean, I don't think it's a secret. Obviously, it's not a secret. No. It is what it is. Like, it's, you know, like, again, love him or hate him. I know there's some people that can't stand him. I got some friends that are like, that don't rock with him at all. But I always said, listen, man, like, it is what it is. Like,
it is what it is, bro.
You can't, nothing you can do. You know,
like, honestly, like you said, you could love him, you could hate him, you could debate whether he's corny. Some people say he's corny. Some people say he's this, he's that. He rides waves. Say what you want, man. The man has had a major impact and been one of the biggest stars of the decade. So say what you want. You don't have to like every movie. Arnold Schwarzenegger was one of the biggest actors in the 80s. Do you have to like his movies? No. But he was one of the biggest actors in the 80s. It is what it is, man.
Yep. It is what it is.
And that's what it is. Drake is one of the biggest dudes of the decade. It's not debatable. You could hate, you could love, you could whatever, but it is what it is.
All right, so next up, to piggyback off that topic, we got the city of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of culture, Toronto mushroomed in a way that only, I would say, the Mario Brothers can possibly rival. Music-wise, you know, we just finished talking about Drake, but look at all the stars that came from this city that had an impact, from The Weeknd, Daniel Caesar, Roy Woods, Nav, Party Next Door, Jazz Cartier. Like, I won't throw Justin Bieber in there because he's from Stratford, so that, I don't think that really counts. But either way, they all had an impact on music to the point where that fans across the country and the border are anxiously awaiting their releases. And as I mentioned before, some of the biggest producers emerged and impacted hip hop to a degree. And you can argue, I'm losing my train of thought today. You can argue that some of the tastemakers of the genre, beat making wise, from Boy Wonder to T-Minus to Wonder Girl to President Jeff, Rich Kid, and there's a whole bunch of others, that's changed the sound of how hip hop is right now.
Mm-hmm.
The city supported some of the biggest festivals, and the list keeps growing. From Veld, even TIFF's popularity has grown even larger this decade. In sports, you had the bat flip from Jose Bautista with the Jays, which was like, I can tell you right now, that's something that's going to live forever in this city. The bat flip. And then you got the Raptors. They had their greatest success in their history, turning, you know, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and Masai to household names. They hosted an all-star game, which, you know, you were waiting for decades for that to happen. And then the Raptors exacerbated all possibilities in 2018. They lost to LeBron and them. They traded their franchise cornerstone, DeMar DeRozan, for Kawhi Leonard. And you know what happened? They ended up winning the title, bringing the first NBA championship, you know, across the border.
Yeah.
And we got the chance to see 2.5 million people shower them with love. What are your thoughts?
Man, okay. So to your original point, remember back in the day, right? Everybody would be like, oh, man, you know, I'm from Toronto or Montrealers or whatever. You know, it would be like, hey, I'm a great rapper despite the fact that I am from Montreal or from Toronto. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, being from Canada, period, within that, you know, urban music would be a stripe against you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it became to the point now where if you are in music and you go to the States and be like, or anywhere and be like, yeah, I'm from Toronto, like, okay, let me hear you out. You must, maybe you have something. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It became a plus. It became something on your resume that jumped out. People were expecting great music out of Toronto.
Yeah.
And, like, honestly speaking, it wasn't something that was, you know, not deserved. If you think about, If you think about how small the city of Toronto is on the grand scheme of things, you know, worldwide, to the ratio of how much great impact they've had on music this decade. Like, what you've named, like, producers, artists, like, and you didn't even touch R&B. Or maybe you mentioned The Weeknd, but Party Next Door as well. And like,
yeah, Daniel Caesar as well.
Yeah, like, yo, I don't know what, you guys are just down the highway from here. I don't know what happened here compared to there this past decade. But Toronto, man, like they've gained the respect and notoriety of a major powerhouse in North America, entertainment-wise, sports-wise, culturally. Americans love Toronto. They love the city of Toronto. The city of Toronto has really gained notoriety as a legitimate major metropolitan city in North America, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And is probably the only city that Americans really recognize in Canada as far as going to or want to spend any time in. You know what I mean? So, like, Toronto is really, it's really come up. I mean, or I won't say come up, but really gained recognition this year or this decade.
Now, I didn't even mention some of the sports-related things in terms of some of the athletes, the younger athletes that's been coming through here. So, I mean, you're talking from tennis, from the Bianca, I can't pronounce her name. She just won the U.S. Open. She just beat Serena. You got a ton of Canadian high school basketball players that's gone stateside. You're at the point now. There's so much Toronto basketball players in the States playing D1 ball. Like, the pipeline for Sixers, just, you know, for the Sixth entering the NBA, to the point where it's like, there's actually more NBA players from Toronto than there are from New York City. How crazy is that?
Wow.
How crazy is that? Like,
are you serious?
Yeah. Like, there's so much Canadians from Toronto that's in the NBA right now. It's
more than New York City?
More than New York City. That's insane. You know, and, you know, a large part had to do with just, you know, the Raptors obviously being in Toronto has had a major effect on that. But, like, you know, in the last, you know, since 2013, since Tim Lewicki and Masai Ujiri came to Toronto, I mean, they laid down the groundwork for championships. And I remember when, Tim Lewicki, he was only here for a couple of years, but I remember I was cheering like somebody hit the shot at the buzzer when I saw on the ticker that he got hired to be the CEO of Maple, you know, MLSE, because that guy, if you ever look at his resume, he's all about winning. Like, winning big. He's all about championships wherever he goes, being number one. He does not care about just making money. He's not in this to be second. He's not in this to be complacent. So when they came in with that vision, I got excited, because I'm like, okay, that's something different from what that's been preached in the city of Toronto for so long. You know, and to see, like, it ended
that's
up...
that's important, too.
Yeah, sure. And to see that it ended up to a point where, like I said again, the Raptors won the championship. Like, Sean, there's times I'm watching a commercial, and I'll see a Raptors commercial, and they're showing, like, clips of, like, the celebration, and I'm still kind of like, I can't believe that happened. I'm still like that. Like, I'm
know,
still
like, crazy.
I'm still. I was there. I saw it. I mean, I did a slew of podcasts following their journey this year, which I had a lot of fun doing, by the way. But, like, all that stuff. Like, even with all said and done, sometimes I still look at the clips. I still look at my phone and still see the videos, and I'm still like, I can't believe that happened.
And no one could take that away.
No.
From Toronto. Ever. Doesn't matter what happens. If you guys never make it back to the playoffs, you know what I mean? Like, no one could take that away. You guys, Toronto, Raptors, City of Toronto, NBA Championship City, man. No matter what you want to say.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of cities, plenty of franchises that have been around way longer that cannot say the same thing, man.
Yep. And I don't think it's over, because I think the way Messiah stuff set up, like, I think it's set up where there's you know, like, the core is still young, and
yeah, and they're know, still balling regardless,
yeah,
man.
They're still balling without Kawhi, and you know, some people thought, like, you had pundits in the States and analysts not even having to make the playoffs this year, which I thought was stupid, and it shows you it kind of shows you too how much ball they actually, not to say how much ball they actually watch, because they watch a lot of basketball, but how much Raptors basketball they watch. Because for you to say, like, they're not even going to make the playoffs, I'm like, okay, you guys aren't watching. Like, you guys aren't actually watching.
You guys got some legit players out there, and Siakam is a monster.
Yeah, like, and I'd be remiss to not mention the fact that, like, you know, in order to grow as a major metropolitan city, we have to mention the cost of living, of property in this city. Forget sports and entertainment and culture for a minute. The judgment of growth for a city is property value. And nothing, Sean, I mean nothing, has grown like the property value in this city.
Yeah, it's true, man.
Everybody's property is, especially depending on where you're living, has either doubled or tripled in the last 10 years.
It's true. Well, it's a close, Vancouver rivals that. I was in Vancouver recently. Right. Vancouver is pretty serious, but I agree with you. That is a real indicator of a city on the rise, and people are willing to pay that much to live there.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
When you're seeing people lining up around the block, you know, to go put down on a townhouse that's costing over $1 million. you're like, what is actually happening here?
Yeah, it's true. You're
like, what is actually happening here? But yeah, the city of Toronto has to get its praise, man. You know, I'm sorry to say, but hey, man, the city of Toronto did its thing as this last 10 years in ways that, like, I could have never fathomed when I just moved to Toronto. You know, but now I'm just like, yo, it's this is what it is. This is exactly what it is now. It's a major. This is, I can't even say it's thriving to be a major metropolitan. It is a major metropolitan city. It is.
Yeah, man.
That's it.
It is.
That's it.
People, you rank it up there. Biggest cities in North America, not just, you know, as far as impact in North America, you know, New York, L.A., this, that. Toronto's mentioned up there, man.
Yeah, you have to. It's the third or fourth largest city now in North America.
Yeah,
it's okay. Only L.A., New York, and I think Chicago might be bigger. That's it.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know. I didn't know that.
Toronto's huge.
You mean population, you mean?
Yeah. It's just the biggest market, TV market even, too.
Wow. Okay.
So next up, we got Kendrick Lamar.
K-Dot.
He became one of the best rappers for his generation. He essentially knocked out 3 album releases. 2 of them were definite classics for this decade. If you want to bring up terms of Good Kid, Mad City being the best of them. And with Damn, he became the first rapper to win a Pulitzer Prize for his album. His team, Top Dog Entertainment, put out some certified stars from SZA, Schoolboy Q, J-Rock, and Sir. And he also did the soundtrack for Black Panther, which became one of the biggest grossing movies in the history of film.
Yep.
And also his mixtape album Section 80 was one of the most important mixtapes of the decade, considering how that, you know, like how that propelled him to superstardom at a certain point. What are your thoughts on Kendrick Lamar being the MVP of this decade or an MVP of this decade?
I think it's earned. It's legitimate. I'll be honest. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm one of the biggest hip-hop Grinches ever. I come into it assuming I don't like you. One. And when we talk about LA rappers, you know, growing up being from the East Coast, other than, like, you know, maybe the NWAs and the Snoops and the Dres, generally speaking, I was never a real huge fan of California hip hop, right? Mm-hmm. Not saying that they weren't good, they just wasn't my style, really. I wasn't even a real huge Tupac fan, but forget it, that's another topic for another day. So when I heard people mentioning this guy, Kendrick Lamar, as a legitimate spitter, like a legitimate hip hop artist that, you know, could really rub elbows with, you know, the best of them. I'm like, well, he's from LA. They don't really rap like that, generally speaking. You know what I mean? So maybe it'll be melodic. You'll sit there and you'll bob your head to it, but how good could he be lyrically? That's just not how they, that's not how they're built rap wise. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Took a couple of songs for me to really give it to him. I think, or I want a couple of songs. The songs were out there. I mean, just me consuming them, I was like, you know, reluctant to. I think where I first really started to say, like, what the. He had, I think it was on his Section 80 Was it like a taxi cab freestyle or something like that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, whoa, who's that? And someone's like, that's Kendrick Lamar. I'm like, holy shit. So I gave him some, like, I listened to him, man, and man, it goes to show, you know, I hate to use an old, stale cliche, but, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, or by the cover that you maybe ignorantly still think it has, to mm-hmm. think that LA rap, or, you know, the internet with people continuing to evolve and flourish, that people still fall into, you know, a particular, you know, a particular whatever a concept that you think of that particular area, or a concept that you try to box them into,
right.
You know, because LA rap is definitely way beyond that, and I wouldn't even say LA rap, global rap cannot just be put into buckets, because, you know what I mean, there's different styles globally. All that big preamble to say, man, Kendrick Lamar, crazy dope. Like you said, all of his albums he dropped, like, he has the best of everything. Content, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lyrical ability. His flow is crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he checks all the boxes, man. He's crazy. He's crazy talented. Like you said, his impact. And the funny thing is, he hasn't really over-flooded the market with music,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, some people have done that, and it's like, yeah, okay, we get it. You know, you're not that great. But when like, he's put out a few albums, and, man, the quality of these albums, they're just, like,
high. Yeah.
So high, man. So high. Like, dude, definitely, man, like, he made the hip-hop Grinch look at him and, you know, love Christmas again type of thing. Like,
so your heart grew three times the size.
Yeah, yeah, man. Because I'll tell you, hip-hop wise, generally speaking, I'll say this decade has been trash hip-hop wise. But
mm-hmm.
one of the, you know, finding the gem in the trash, so to speak, is Kendrick Lamar. He's one of the artists in the past decade that have saved hip-hop from being just a complete trash genre of music, man. Like, he's really, really been that bright, one of the bright spots in this decade.
Now, we did an episode a couple years ago when Damn was just released, and, like, the Damn album was crazy. You know,
yeah.
DNA was, like, that song to me was, like, that was, like, a lyrical exercise. And
yeah.
flow and content, like, it was just insane. The concept of the whole album was dope. It was so lyrically dense. The production was sweet. Like, everything about it was dope. But I gotta say, I'm a guy that's like, I'm not a hip-hop Grinch, but I'm a hard person to throw that word classic around.
Yeah.
I don't like throwing that word around a lot when it comes to material. Like, I think that's gotta be something that's, it's like, once it's a classic, like, you gotta earn that. Like, you just saying, like, oh, this album's a classic, I'm just like, okay, just calm down. You know,
yeah.
You just heard this album for a week. Take it easy. Yeah. Take it easy.
Everything's a classic to some people.
Yeah, like, everything's a classic. It's like, oh, it's a classic. You're just like, dude, the album came out Friday. Can you hold it for a couple of months first?
Seriously.
You know, and then it's like 2 months later, like, yeah, you're right. It's not a classic. Yeah. But it's good, though. It's good. I'm like, yes, I know it's good, but it's not a classic.
Yeah.
But Good Kid, Mad City was, I mean, that album didn't just put him on the map, obviously, but I think that album is a classic. Like, I think honestly, that's one of the best albums of the decade by far, and that album was damn near flawless from top to bottom. And it's so rare, especially in this day and age, that you hear an album from top to bottom that you actually not even skipping.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you're listening, you're taking in everything that he's doing. Like, it was, I mean, the joke is, like, my wife now, like, I remember back then, like, when that album came out, I put her onto it, and yo, she got to the point where she was listening to that album so much. She got to the point, Sean, where she knew the album better than I did. Like, she would be reciting me lyrics, and I'm like, oh, what song is that? That's from the Good Kid, Mad City. I'm like, oh, damn, like, for real? Like, she embraced that album to, like, a degree that, like, it even shocked me, you know. But yeah, you know, like, I think you hit a great point, I should say, where he hasn't flooded the market in terms of, like, when he does put stuff out, still it's still like a, it's still a thing. Like him and I mean, he was a honorable mention. J. Cole is another one that's kind of like this, where when he puts out stuff, it's like oh my god, it's a scene, it's a movement. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's a movement because you know it's gonna be nice. It's almost like a guarantee it could be nice. So when he, you know, I can't wait for the next Kendrick Lamar album. But I remember Damn, I was like, okay, yeah, I've been hearing the buzz behind this. And then when you heard it, I was just like, oh my god, like this album was dope. But Good Kid, Mad City, like, man, I you know, for you hip hop heads, I would implore you to listen to that again, man. Like, that album was damn near flawless. Especially seriously, for this decade, it was damn near flawless.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So the fact that you pumped out, because even, I mean, the worst one out of the three is probably the Pimp a Butterfly. But the Pimp a Butterfly, I thought it was dope.
I mean,
it just wasn't, I would rank that third out of the three, but it was still nice.
I wasn't a huge fan of the grooviness, but I think I already stated my displeasure with that album. I won't really belabor the point, but yeah, I wasn't. But I mean, as much as I didn't love it, I didn't love the Groove Fest. You can't, like, I couldn't really tell anybody it's garbage. You know what I mean? It might not have been my cup of tea. You know what I'm saying?
But still nice, yeah.
Yeah, he's just an artist. He's a great artist, and I may not have understood his artistic vision on that one. But yeah, like, I mean, he's definitely one of the higher quality, higher caliber artists of the decade. And anybody who argues that is just a stupid idiot, because there's nothing to argue with that.
And then sonically, to have your fingerprints all over the Black Panther soundtrack to the degree where, you know, from now on, I mean, that movie was a classic movie. And anytime you watch that movie, you're going to associate his work with that movie. I mean, that's a feather in your cap that nobody can take away from you either.
Exactly. You know,
because nothing was, but we're gonna get to like Black Panther stuff later. But like that was such a movement onto itself when that movie came out. So the fact that like his songs were all over that, like that soundtrack throughout the movie, and like you associate that, you know, like his stuff with that movie. You know what I mean?
It was like
an African West Coast sounding soundtrack. Like it's listen, man. Like he's. He definitely did the damn thing, man. Like, he's definitely the MVP. He's definitely an MVP for sure. He has to be. Next up, we got LeBron James. He is the most impactful sports figure for the decade. He's won 3 MVPs and 3 titles during his last 10 years. He created the whole super team era and became the godfather for player empowerment and team stacking. He's become the greatest player of his generation. He's had a major impact off the court. He essentially became a billion-dollar athlete by signing a lifetime deal with Nike. He executive produced a 2 Chainz album. If you love 2 Chainz, he created a high school for over 1,400 students. He supported social stances and causes. And the most underrated thing that he's done is he also, in the vein of Drake, he also uses influence to empower his 4 friends to not only manage his career, but branch out to create new vehicles and become one of the biggest power players in sports and entertainment. So is he an MVP to you?
Okay. I think it goes without saying, everything that you're describing is, in fact, legitimate argument for him to be an MVP. Now that I've got that out of my system... I just don't really like LeBron James, man. I just don't like him that much. And I'll tell you what. Everything you're saying is true. But he just doesn't have that gravitas that Michael Jordan had. Or, I don't know. Like, it's, you can't... And again, people are going to tell me I'm crazy, stupid, whatever. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But I don't know, like, you look at him, you know what it is? Michael Jordan knew he was the greatest. Or at least he thought he was, and other people agree with him. LeBron James doesn't carry himself with that same degree of confidence. Part of me looks at LeBron James as great as he is. He's accomplished things I'll never dream to even think about. He's going to be a billionaire. He's going to be a an owner, a franchise owner. Like you said, he's a legitimate superstar in the NBA. He's been legitimately the best player on the planet for years. But there's just something missing. I can't even explain what it is. I can't put my finger on it. I'm just underwhelmed. When I look at him compared to, you know, the other greats, I don't know. Something's just missing. It just is. I don't know what else to say. I'll stop there. I'll defer to you. You're definitely the basketball expert between the two of us. I'm just saying something's just missing, man. So, yes, is he an MVP for the decade? 100%. Do I necessarily care about LeBron James or rank him or think that people are going to, like my comparison to Beyonce before where I said people are going to look back in history and be like, oh, wow, I was there for that. I don't think they're going to say that for LeBron. They were there for LeBron? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Again.
Well, I think the biggest thing to me was just, I think the whole player empowerment thing, I think, is the biggest impact he had in terms of everything else. Like, yeah, the super team stuff, I wasn't a fan of it, you know, and all that stuff. But and the team stacking, I definitely wasn't a fan of it. To me, if you're going to call yourself the greatest player in the world, I respect the fact that you're taking that into your hands and use, like, he's one of those guys that, like, he recognizes his power and he utilizes it to every degree, which I can appreciate that, especially from an athlete, because athletes aren't really put in that position to do that, or at least that's the mentality. So I give him his props for that. But at the same time, I'm like, it's something bothered me to the core, Sean, when he was going after Kawhi Leonard. After Kawhi won the title with the Raptors, like, as a competitor, you know, as an athlete that wants to, like, you know, dust off your rivals, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. To me, to go after Kawhi Leonard, I was like, come on, man. Like, dude, really? Like, geez, you got Anthony Davis already. You know what I mean? Just build a great team around you guys.
Seriously.
And keep it moving. I'm like, you already did the super team stuff already.
Seriously. You know what I mean? It's like he wanted to have the literal Space Jam Monstars on his team.
Yeah, like I'm just like, dude, like, what else do you need at this point, man? Like, I know you need great players, but I'm like, you got Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is an incredible player. If you're the great, I'm not saying if you're the greatest of all time, you want to carry, like, as my father would say, shithounds to the peak, to the mountaintop. But I'm like, come on, man. Like, at a certain point, it's like, okay, like, just, you should be looking at Kawhi like, yo, congratulations, I'm gonna take you out next year.
Yeah,
not like, join me so we can go rule the NBA again. Like, I'm just like, oh, come on, man.
Like, he's just missing, like that level of competitor, that level of, you know, killer. Like, F that, I'm going to show you guys why. No, I want to pad the stats. I want to win championships. So, hey, can I take every player? Can I make my team the all-star team so we can guarantee a win? Like, that's his mentality.
Like, if there wasn't a salary cap, I think he would go after every big, he would cold call every big superstar to play on one team.
Yeah, I would agree.
Even a 12th man would be like a 5-time scoring champ. You know what I mean? I'm just like, okay, like, at some point, it's like, all right, like, can, like, that bothered me. Like, that bothered me to its core. Last year. But I think the biggest thing for, like I said, again, is just how we empowered other players, because for better or worse, I know we've had a million arguments about the KD situation, him going to Golden State.
Yeah.
That I've always said that, like, that was influenced by what he saw with LeBron, because, you know, the thing about sports is, and you know, like, and time, especially in the era that we live in, things get, not to say it gets forgotten, but things have a way of just, you know, once you start winning and succeeding, doesn't matter how you do it, at a certain point, it just levels to the wayside. So, yep, like when he started off the decade, you know, doing the super team thing and everybody hated their guts, I was like, look, man, I respect the move because that was a power play. You know what I mean? That was, in terms of an athlete, that was a huge move that they did. But at the same time, I looked at it and I said, look, in about 4 or 5 years, people are going to be looking at LeBron like he's one of the best players. He's going to be compared to Michael Jordan in terms of, is he not the greatest player because he won all these championships? And then people are going to start looking at Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade like they're holding him back. And sure enough, Sean, I wish I put money on that. Like, I wish there was some sort of betting line I could have put down on that in Vegas, because I would be like doing this podcast from my own condo, like from my own like actual building, my own condo that I'm selling and renting off to people. Because and that's exactly what happened. Like, history, at some point, once you're winning, it doesn't matter how it goes. At some point, people start changing their minds, and I think that was the biggest thing with LeBron that I saw. Like, you know, and we're going to get to this other player in a minute, but I think the biggest thing is like the whole player empowerment thing was, I think that was the biggest impact he had. And honestly, I commend him for that, because once you put the power in players' hands, I mean, you've opened that Pandora's box. It can't be closed now. Because look at what Kawhi did this summer.
Like, that's true.
Like, Kawhi did a power play that, Sean, nobody saw coming. Nobody saw coming, man.
That's true.
He played the Lakers. He played the Raptors. You know what I mean? He got everything he wanted. Like, literally everything he wanted. And then while everything was said and done, he still only signed a 2-year deal, essentially.
That's true. You know, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, he got everything he wanted. But I mean, part of that is the empowerment. Like, he feels empowered. He knows who he is. Even though he's quiet, doesn't say anything, he knows his value. He can wield that value in a way that could be bent to his will.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know, and LeBron, you know, again, you know, we're using this term throughout the podcast, love him or hate him, or love them or hate him, but really and truly, you got to give him props for that. Like, that part I give him props for. You know what I mean? Because, like, now, like, other players are doing it. And, you know, like, at this stage, it's, yeah, he's got to get MVP for that. Like, just for that alone. But, I mean, yeah, he's the best player of his generation. Nobody's going to deny that. But, and I hear what you're saying, because I know some people do feel like there's something inauthentic about his success. You know, and you know, I get it. I do get that. You know, yeah, I'm not a LeBron
hater. Something about him. Like, LeBron's kind of a fraud. I don't know. Like, well, he's a fraud. Two, he's weak of character. Three, he ain't even convinced his own damn self that he is everything he's trying to push. You know, like, who are you trying to convince, me or you? And I say this with my bank account being 0.0001% of what his is, and my accomplishments being, if LeBron James woke up tomorrow morning with my life, he would, you know, jump off of a building. But with that said, I say that knowing that I'm not really in a position to act like, oh, who's this guy think he is, because he's incredibly successful, right? He's, I'd say, as a businessman, he's been, you know, he's, what does he have, a lifetime contract with Nike, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's brilliant. No, that's not true. Not brilliant. He's just made very great business choices, like you said, and brought his friends up and what have you. So that's cool. But in the grand scheme of things, people look at NBA players and, you know, who had such a major impact. They look back at them. So LeBron, he's always going to be a great player. He's a great player. One of the greats, arguably better than Michael Jordan. Give me a break, man. Give me a break. Look at LeBron. Like, if you have LeBron attached to a lie detector, like LeBron, look, come on, are you serious? You, like, that would be the question. Just keep on repeating it. LeBron, are you serious? No. Like, come on. Are you serious? Are you serious? And he'd be like, okay, no, I'm not serious. Okay, thank you. Argument done. Michael's better. Michael's a killer. He's an assassin. He has that gravitas. He has that, you know, magnetic personality. Not magnetic, but, you know, he has that larger than life. LeBron doesn't feel larger than life. Does LeBron feel larger than life to you?
Not in the way Michael Jordan was.
Nah, bro.
But
nah.
But I think, you know, and another topic we'll get into that with, but I think social media and things like that are part of the reason why I think it feels that way. I don't know. For me, it doesn't, you know, but again, I'm not in my 20s. I'm not like, you know, like, it's not all encompassing with me when it comes to this stuff anymore. So,
yeah.
So I guess it doesn't feel that way for me that way, but.
Well, I'll tell you what. Like, sneakers tell the real truth of the story. LeBron's, you think in 20 years anybody's going to be sitting there spending $1,500 for LeBron's? Nah, bro. LeBron's now, no one cares about LeBron's. LeBron's shoes going to die. As soon as LeBron retires, the LeBron factories are going to close down. No one's buying LeBron shoes after he's done. Michael Jordan hasn't set foot in on an NBA court as a player in how long, man? And his shoes are still the biggest shoes out there, man. Why? Because that was the impact he had on the league, on culture, on society back then, sports-wise. LeBron doesn't have that impact. No one wants to wear LeBron's now.
You know, it's funny, during All-Star Weekend, I'm not going to name the friend, but I remember talking to him, and he, and this is the impact Jordan has before he move on to the, you know, and I'm not throwing the saying this to throw shade at LeBron, but I just want to share a quick story. But
yeah.
He called me from the Jordan, from the pop-up store, the Jordan pop-up store that was on Yonge Street, which is now, like, you know, it's a full-fledged, store now.
Okay. But
back in 2016, it was just a pop-up store, and you know, they were waiting in line. He was waiting in line at the store to go with some of his friends. And a caravan of trucks pulled up. A caravan of Tahoes pulled up playing Jumpman, Jumpman. You know, the Drake and Future song, Jumpman, Jumpman.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, Calvin, he called me. He's like, Calvin, he's like, I was watching this caravan bumping Jumpman. We're all kind of like bopping our heads. And Michael Jordan walked out of that Tahoe.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, Calvin, he's like, I'm a grown man. He said, my hand started shaking. He's like, I couldn't even pull out my phone to take a picture because my hands were shaking. I got so nervous and my hands were shaking so much. He's like, I couldn't even pull my phone out to take the picture. And I was like, I was listening to the story and I didn't laugh and make fun of him. Because I was just like, wow, look at that impact this man still has on people.
Yeah, man.
I'm like, yo, this guy hasn't played ball in like 15 years.
Yeah, man.
And he's long retired, and here's a 30-something-year-old grown man still like, oh my god, you know, when the guy steps out of the truck beside him, like that is major.
Yeah, bro.
That is major, yeah. And I mean,
that,
you know,
sums it all up. That says it all right there.
Yeah. So that was part one of the MVPs of the decade. For part two, you can go ahead and click on it right now. I'm not going to be the one to hold you up, so go ahead. Consider this like a mini intermission, if you will. It's the AV Podcast on South Sharav Radio. I'll see you in a minute.